and growth hormone deficiencies. Well, you'd think this would keep someone busy, right, all the time? Well, along with his busy professional career, he maintains an active personal life. He's married with three daughters, residing in Carlsbad, California. During the fall, he coaches the girls' soccer teams and has managed to maintain his expertise in karate with a second-degree black belt, which is good for patient compliance, of course. And he is now learning different forms of weapons. He also enjoys playing the saxophone, being active in sports, personal training, and family trips. And his weekends are full with family and sports-related activities. Wow. Well, get ready for something that's going to bless your life. Information that you're going to want to spread the word about this near and far. I just am so excited. Dr. Winkler, welcome to our program.
Gosh, Kenneth, thank you so much. With that introduction, I'm worn out myself right now.
Oh, yeah, you've been so busy. We got to take a rest now.
Even how my body makes me take a rest, it wears out.
Oh, well, I am just so excited. When I learned about this insulin potentiation therapy and what you call it at your website, kinder and gentler chemotherapy, how did you get interested in this and alternative treatments for cancer?
Well, you know, Cam, I got to share your enthusiasm just as much as you're interested, even just in the description of it. I had the same enthusiasm when I first heard about it years ago, about 4 years ago. Dr. Brightman was explaining to me what he was doing when he was treating patients and essentially getting remissions in cancer with using low-dose chemo and potentiating with the use of insulin. So just hearing that has always been something quite interesting for me. I've always been interested in cancer and cancer treatment. I was even in medical school looking at books by Bernie Siegel and other authors to kind of understand and begin to unravel this mystery of cancer. So when I finally connected with Dr. Brightman, who's essentially now who I work with, and he's also an IPT instructor, since then we've basically developed a model and we're growing and expanding on this model of using low-dose chemo with insulin and getting this to work, which we are seeing quite efficiently at times. So it's
wow.
Quite interesting, yeah.
Yeah, well, and by the way, I want to give your website, if that's okay,
sure.
That people could go learn more about this at https://IPTHEALING.com.
That's correct.
Good. And so this, what is the theory about how IPT works?
Well, you know, what happens is that when you look at a cancer cell, the cancer has a metabolism that only can take in glucose or sugar. And it has developed insulin receptors on that. So basically things that pull insulin and make the insulin work better on the cancer cells. So the number of receptors are about 16 times as many as on a normal cell. So the insulin, which carries in glucose, can carry in amino acids and carries in other nutrition into the cell. It's just basically a carrier. Every person produces insulin, but we're using increased amounts of insulin to draw chemo into the cell. So essentially what we're doing is starving out the body, as well as the cancer, of glucose. And we bring people into a controlled therapeutic state around a blood sugar of 30 to 35. And most people are like, oh, gosh, that's dangerous. Under controlled circumstances, the body has a normal reaction to this low hypoglycemic state. And that's when they become hot, they become sweaty, they become hungry. And that's what we call the therapeutic moment. It's at that time that we give the chemo. Because we've starved the body out, we've starved the chemo out. So we started the cancer out of glucose, so now we add the chemo.
Ah.
The chemo is going to go where the insulin goes, which is where the cancer is, in a 16-to-1 ratio. So when we don't have to give heavy dosages, we give a much lower dose, and we get it to work better, and it's more directed. It's like directing the chemo into the direction where the cancer is.
So we
keep people at that state. It's interesting. We keep people in that state for a few minutes, and then we give them something to eat. And we also give them glucose again, intravenously. So the whole time the patient has an IV going. So it really has not been dangerous. We keep a small syringe of sugar water right next to them in case something were to happen. But we've never seen anything happen. We've not used this emergency glucose in the event that the blood sugar would get too low. We've never used it.
Oh, okay. So the monitoring is so effective that they can be in that. In that low glycemic state, and then the chemo is used low doses of chemo and get much higher benefit than with standard methods.
That's correct, and you actually will see that. Patients will actually show you that their swelling or the tumor will shrink faster. The side effects appear to be less. We still see some side effects, and we're still working on what we can do to reduce those side effects. But we're using about 10% of the dose, and it looks to me like we're getting a much, much better effect. And people go to work the same day. We've had people come in. They sometimes fight for the early morning appointment so they can get in, get their treatment done, and then go about their day. So a fair amount of people still feel well enough to go to work and still keep a productive life going, despite their treatments and despite their cancer.
Wow.
So it's a win-win situation when you can actually do that. So I think we've got some people, when they come in early enough in their cancer, where it hasn't affected their weight loss and their metabolism, and you can go in there, and they literally walk up and down the hallway. They don't look sick. They feel fine. If you saw them on the street, you'd never know they were undergoing treatment for cancer.
Mm. So once again, that early diagnosis, while not mandatory, is helpful.
Yeah, the earlier you get a diagnosis on cancer, the better. Obviously, once it's spread, you're going to have problems, and it just takes a lot longer to get a handle on that, and it requires sometimes a little bit more ideas in terms of the treatment, sometimes maybe more chemos. You know, one of the things you have to remember with chemo is that there's about six different categories of chemo, and most oncologists will use maybe one or two drugs. Sometimes for like a lymphoma or leukemia, they'll use three or four. But we use usually routinely three or four and try to get at the cancer from multiple different angles with the different chemos.
So it doesn't build up any resistance?
Well, that's a problem that we're going to have with almost any type of chemo treatment, is that the cancer is smart, and it has a particular gene in there called an MDR1 gene. That's multi-drug resistant gene. This gene codes for a pump, and that pump will go to the outside of the cell, right on that cell membrane, and when it sees that chemo come into the body, into the cell, it will kick the chemo back out again, and the chemo won't be able to do its effect on the cancer cell. So we have to find ways around that, and we've actually, one of the things we do is we draw blood and we send it to Greece it's called the RGCC lab. It's in Greece, and they will analyze that blood to tell us more specifically which chemo agents to use on that particular patient's cancer. And then we'll also get back a report on the genetics of that cancer. Does that cancer overexpress this MDR1 gene? Does it overexpress a gene for forming new blood vessels? The cancers form new blood vessels to feed themselves. Does it have genes for growth? Increasing growth factor. Other components of that cancer can be analyzed at this lab. And then lastly, you get a nutrition sampling of about 40 or more different nutritional supplements that people will use or have used for treating cancer, and they will test those and see which ones actually work the best.
On the particular cancer that the individual is dealing with, because you're sending a blood sample for this testing.
Yeah, whenever you have a cancer, particularly stages 3 or 4, there's going to be something in the blood, micrometastases, small metastases that have spread from the original tumor. You've got it in the bloodstream and the lymphatics. So they're drawing from a blood sample. They will culture it out, and they will test the different chemo agents. What's nice to know about that is that, for example, if you have breast cancer and we use the standard drugs, this is what we do, we use the standard drugs that the oncologist would use, but sometimes we realize that they may not be working, or the patient says, I'm not really noticing any improvement. And then we go back and say, hey, let's get this test. And then we come back and find out, wow, their cancer is sensitive to a colon cancer drug. Or somebody with prostate cancer might need a breast cancer drug. So you find that the different drugs, whether they're used with different types of cancer, we actually can find that particular cancer and that particular patient is sensitive to different types of drugs. And with that, then we can come up with a certain amount of combination drugs that we can use to elicit a better clinical effect on a patient.
Mm, okay. Now, this IPT, I hadn't heard about it until a Dr. Scott Robinson that I know in San Diego County referred me to you folks, but can you give me a little of the background or about IPT? How it was developed, discovered?
Yeah, the interesting thing is it wasn't discovered in this country. It was developed by a Mexican surgeon. He was a surgeon in the Army, and this was about 80 years ago. And he himself was very tall and very lean and had a hard time gaining weight. And right around, I believe, in the 1930s, insulin was actually discovered and developed. And they were using insulin, and he used it on himself to gain weight and found that when he gave insulin with each meal, he could gain weight. So then he started experimenting with it and began using it to treat certain conditions. And he started off in children with polio, and there's some original videos. You can actually see them. I think his grandson has kept an archive of these videos. And the children would come to his clinic in Mexico, near Mexico City, and they had polio, and they would come in on crutches. You would see them limping and having some different deformities related to polio. Within 2 or 3 days, the kids are out playing in the yard without any evidence of any deformities. So he was doing this insulin potentiation on polio children 78 years ago.
Wow.
So it began to be developed, and then I guess his son also became a physician, and the two doctors, their names are Donato Perez Garcia, the original doctor, and then Donato Perez Garcia, number two, his son, the two together worked out a number of different regimens for different conditions and found that it worked really well on their cancer patients and that they were using chemo and lower dosages, and they developed these regimens. And what's interesting is every one of these regimens, the best drug, the best concentration of drugs was about 10% of the standard dosages that the traditional oncologists will use.
Wow.
Now, the interesting thing is the grandson now is the third physician in that family who has taken it to Tijuana and has begun to educate other doctors in this country and other countries. There's over 200 doctors on the planet that are doing insulin potentiated therapy.
Oh, okay. And
growing practice.
Wow. And it's accepted in terms of being able to do this in the United States?
Well, the United States is being accepted. Essentially what we're doing is we are using traditional chemo medications that are accepted and are used by the oncologist, so there's nothing different there. We're using insulin in an off-label use, and as doctors, we're allowed to use things in an off-label fashion, and doctors do this all the time. So the insulin is what we're using to potentiate these treatments and get the chemo to work better.
Okay.
So from acceptance standpoint, yes, I mean, we're allowed to do these types of treatments.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, I wanted to be able to, because there's certain things that some practitioners in this country have not been able to do legally. People have had to go out of the country for certain treatment regimes. And what it's nice to hear is that more and more doctors in our country could learn this and make it an active part of their practice.
You know, and I think those type of rules are changing a little bit. I think that for many years, a lot of people were concerned that they'd have to go to foreign countries to get different treatments, but certain things are becoming slowly more accepted in the United States as well. So these type of laws, I think, change from state to state. For example, there are 17 states in the U.S. that allow the use of Laetril.
Hmm.
And that was something that people would go to Mexico for many years ago.
Yeah.
So this is now,
okay.
Not even
and
in California, but it is being used in other states.
Oh, good. Now, I'm just also curious, you mentioned that you learned this from Dr. Brightman.
Actually, I learned it. I was trained with Dr. Donato Perez Garcia the third.
Oh, okay.
In Tijuana, it was a 2-day training class. And then once you have a training class, then you really need to work with somebody who knows how to do this. It takes a little while to develop your staff, essentially, the nursing staff. And that's what's really critical to getting this to work. The nurses know how to monitor the patients. They're good at getting the intravenous access. They're good at doing all the different adjuncts that we use and other type, getting these treatments injected, giving the chemo. The nurses are really instrumental, and that's really what you have to do, is train your staff as well as get the training yourself from other physicians that are familiar with how to use this and what other things to look out for during these treatments. And they're quite unique. But certainly, most physicians will be able to learn this.
Sure. Okay. Well, that's important to know, that this is not a program, that it's been happening for many years, and that a person doesn't have to go through years and years and years of additional training that yes, there is some coordination. It's great to, you know, to get your staff trained by someone that knows how to do it, but apparently the process is fairly learnable in a short amount of time.
Correct. That's very correct. There's a lot of support in the organization. There's actually a web-based group that doctors will email. We will email each other and ask questions. Okay, what are you doing for this particular type of cancer? So we get the, you know, advice and the knowledge base from physicians all over the world, and that actually helps because we do learn a lot more that way.
Ah, now for people that are interested in this, I have to ask, how is this being accepted by insurance companies reimbursing for these treatments?
We're slowly seeing more and more companies begin to reimburse that. For example, most of the practices that I'm familiar with that do the insulin potentiation therapy, they usually have the patients pay up front as they go. And then they have to contact the biller, and the biller will do their own billing, and the insurance company reimburses. But it's helpful to have a biller who knows how to bill this properly. We see Blue Cross Blue Shield. We're starting to see some payments from Aetna, PacifiCare, HealthNet, a few other of the large insurance companies are beginning to reimburse for these type of chemo treatments. And there actually are patients themselves that have argued with these insurance companies, and there's actually some attorneys who have taken this on as well to get coverage. So there's a lot moving in that direction to getting the mainstream to recognize, hey, this is a cheaper way of doing it, this has less effects, and there's a, you know, potential to have a better outcome with less side effects from chemo.
Yeah. Now, because I'd like to tie in a little bit of questioning about your success rate, and if I heard you correctly, also that the treatment regime, as far as a patient would go, for if they had to pay for it or the insurance company, that you can get better results and do this for less money while being kinder to the body.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, I got to pinch myself. I might be dreaming here.
Well, unfortunately, there still is the upfront cost the patient has that they have to pay for the treatments as they go. And the treatments, we essentially do two treatments the first 2 weeks and then once a week thereafter. And then we see how they progress. One of the things we do when we have somebody come in is we'd like to get a PET CT scan. So in order to really start, it'd be best to have a PET CT scan. Now, a PET scan actually is what picks up the activity of the tumor, and a CAT scan tells us the size and the dimension. So with that combo, we have more information. So if we actually go and we do this again, and we do repeat these in 6 weeks, we can then see, okay, has there been an improvement in the level of activity? Because sometimes the size may not change, but if the activity level has changed and it's less, the cancer and the tumor is less active, we've known we're making some effect on that.
Ah, yeah, I would be curious to hear some of the success stories on treating different cancers. Can you share some of those, please?
We have a number, and you know, a lot of different ones come to mind. What even happens, even those that come in with stage 4 cancer, I think the least that we do is we keep them alive longer and with better quality. We've seen tumors, you know, where they're shrinking and they're causing less pain, the patients are able to feel better. Those are worst-case scenarios, where they've got stage 4 cancer and they're not, you know, they don't essentially continue to live, but they do live longer. And most people in the families come back and thank us and say, gosh, we're grateful you kept our wife or our mother around for, you know, 6-9 months longer than anybody had given her. We've had situations where patients were turned down from a number of different places and they came to us for treatment. We've kept them around for another 6 to 9 months with the treatments. We've had a number of success stories. I can think of two right now with lymphomas that we sent out within the last few months within complete remission of their tumors. We had one on Friday that was pretty excited. She had been coming in from Oklahoma for treatments, and her recent PET CT scan showed no activity. So there was no evidence of cancer on her scan, which is different than it was 3 months ago.
Now, she had come and basically taken up residence for 3 months to be treated?
She She had family about within 2 hours of our clinic, so she would drive down once a week for her treatments.
Okay.
And some people will come. We've had people come from Los Angeles, from San Francisco, Northern California. We've had somebody as far as Pittsburgh come to Southern California for treatment. And they had family within an hour, hour and a half drive of our clinic. So people do come from various locations. We heard of someone that wants to come to see us from Florida. Now, there are other doctors in the country that are doing this. So if you look at the website, not to mention, you know, our website is the IPTHealing.com, and then the other website is IPT for cancer, F-O-R, and cancer, IPT for cancer. And that will actually show you which other doctors are listed in that organization that will help, that people can use to help find somebody a little closer to them.
Oh, okay. Great. And then I'm just curious, what other things can you make mention of when you're working with patients for cancer? So that you use the IPT, but what else?
Well, that could be a lengthy discussion. It usually takes us about an hour and a half, usually in the office, to talk to. We spend a good amount of time with our patients who are suffering from cancer and also with the family. So we really like to address the cancer physiology. What is the cancer doing? How does it function? How can we interfere with the functioning of this cancer from as many different angles as possible? So we use a number of different supplements. We recommend a low glycemic diet. So for some people, the Paleolithic type of diet, Atkins type of diet, those are helpful. Some people will go to a completely raw vegetable diet, raw foods diet. Those are difficult to do. I have not. I've only met maybe one or two patients that were able to really tolerate, you know, completely raw foods. That's a little bit difficult. Some people will try to at least limit their meats. We always encourage whatever diet it is to be organic, organically raised, or even, let's say, free-range chickens, and also, you know, free-roaming grass-fed beef. There's a U.S. wellness company that will actually send meats out to people. It's kept frozen and mailed out. There's an emphasis on the dietary components, mostly trying to stay away from sugar. If you actually talk to patients who are suffering from cancer, a lot of them have had diets high in sugar in the past. And that's one of the things that feeds the cancer. So we want to get away from the low glycemic, away from high glycemic foods into low glycemic diets.
Okay.
One element of it, we like to have people looking at their urinary or salivary pH. There's some natural ways to raise their pH, and we can talk about each individual one if you'd like, but just as a general idea, we'd like to do more alkalizing diets. We can measure that in the urine to see if their urine pH becomes more alkaline, preferably over 6.5. If they're familiar with how pH works, you'd like to get your urine pH over 6.5. We talk about certain types of foods, particularly very colorful fruits, berries, strawberries, blueberries. Those have rich colors. Pomegranate, these have got more antioxidants in them, and we'd like to have those because they support the immune system more. And then we like to get into the different components of what cancer can do and how the cancer attacks the body, so formation of new blood vessels, how it spreads, and chemo resistances. So then we work specifically in nutritional supplements to affect three things. One is support the immune system so it doesn't become damaged from the chemo. Two, we'd like to prevent the formation of resistances. And thirdly, we'd like to find a way to enhance the chemo. So we do that both intravenously and also through oral supplementation. So I have a regimen of things that I like people to take before they come in for the IPT and things that they take during the day at home. And we could actually, if we have time, we could go into some different supplements that we do recommend. That would probably be things. Because patients, particularly those that are more informed, that probably listening to you to this radio show, are ones that like to read, like to browse the internet, get a lot of information together. We've got some of the most educated people coming through our office. Because of that, we have to spend a lot of time as well reading and keeping up to date with things. so we like to, you know, we can talk about different supplements if we have time on that. And if
sure. Well, that is interesting because I would suspect that that in addition to seeing only cancer patients, do you see some regular people where you would be doing offering information that would be more of a preventative kind of regime?
We certainly can. There are a certain amount of things that we do that we can look at preventatively. Two things that come to mind is looking at a nutritional evaluation. The Genova lab does something called a NutriVal, and I think MetaMatrix and a few other labs will do something similar, where they break down the individual person's nutrition and seeing what is going on at that cellular level. For example, the B-complex vitamins, B12, folate, riboflavin, are those all being properly utilized? Are there cofactors missing? We look at organic acids, which are the acids that the body uses in the energy production cycle, what we call the Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle. You want to look at those organic acids. We look at amino acids, the breakdown of the body's protein. Is there adequate amounts of that in the body? You look at essential fats in the body. Is there a proper amount of, you know, omega-3s and 6s and 9s and 7s? All that can be done on this one test, and it's now being covered by insurances for PPOs. It's about $150 copay, so it's really worth doing that. It gives you about 30 pages of your individualized individualized biochemistry to work with so that you can begin to look at, okay, there's some toxic metals here, we need to correct that. You're having some problems in your gastrointestinal tract, we need to correct those issues. We need to get rid of candida, build up the natural flora in your bowels. You have some nutritional and digestive issues, you need to take enzymes. I mean, we can really outline a preventative program for really all types of illnesses, come right down to having the benefit of knowing their individual nutrition. And there's another one, if some of your readers are interested in looking at Amy Yasko's work on the Internet. She has done a lot of work with the Genome Project. And then we talk with our patients and have done some testing in regards to methylation of the DNA, and that itself is the methylation process in the DNA is a way to protect the DNA from being expressed. So everybody codes for certain genes for disease. And if you can protect those genes by methylating them, then they won't be expressed. It's kind of like having a Pandora's box. So through proper nutrition, through proper methylation, which, you know, the nutrition augments the methylation processes that then protect the DNA, you don't express those particular cancer genes or other genes that you have in your body.
So and this is something that you test with a blood test?
Both of those are blood tests, and the nutritional evaluation includes a urine test.
Ah, okay. And now, are these things that people could do on an outpatient, out-of-state basis through the clinic?
A lot of those can just go to the website and look at those. One is called holistichealth.com, and that would give you the information on the genetic. Looking, it's called Nutrigenomics.
Okay, and is that holistic with a H or a W?
It's with an H. Holistic Heal, and you're looking for any other way to Google it. It's under Nutrigenomics. It's Nutrigenomics. Nutrigenomics. A couple other labs that will do that type, different type of testing. There's, you said also with the blood, there's urine testing that gets done for the nutritional evaluations, and the Genova lab is under GDX.net.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, your listeners are going to be quite informed. I know they do a lot of research, but these are certain areas to look at that will give you some other ways of augmenting your own treatment care for yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when you're talking about such targeted both nutritional advice about what's going on and what would need to be corrected, as well as to support the protecting of the DNA to basically suppress the likelihood of expression of certain disease conditions.
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, this,
so,
this is,
yeah, I mean,
that's
you
huge.
Look at inflammatory risk factors, you look at the circulatory risk factors, cancer risk factors, all those types of things, or even inflammatory bowel, you can pick up all those things preventatively. So even those that have conditions like that, you just can go back and really figure out the nutrition and then begin to supplement and really reverse some of the processes that are going on.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. Now, how are you seeing in terms of sharing this with other doctors? There's, I know, an American Holistic Medical Association, the AHMA. I don't know if that group is showing some interest or others.
You know, the ACAM group, the American College for Advancement of Medicine, they're located here in California, Laguna Niguel. They have shown a lot of support for what we do. They've invited Dr. Brightman to lecture at least three of the conferences in the last 2 years. So they're, and that in itself will draw more physician interest. You know, the open-minded physicians that are looking at these type of treatments and looking at other alternative treatments are more open-minded, and they really become very enthused, and they've actually sent us quite a number of patients over the years once they understand what we're doing, how we do it, and where our location is.
Wow, okay. And then for doctors to learn about this, can they also contact you, or is there coordinated through Mexico, the doctors that developed it? Or?
I think this is Dr. Brightman's an instructor, and that's going to be something else for you that I will do shortly as well, is to have both of us as instructors. We would like to really set up our office in such a way that we can train other physicians.
Oh, okay. Well, now, and can people email or call, or how would they get more information from you?
The best way to contact us is through email. There is, or just go to the IPT for IPT Healing website, and there's an email attached there, and the other email that you can use is my email, and that's drjwinkler, W-I-N-K-L-E-R, at sbcglobal.net.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see it here on their website, info@iptheeling.com.
That's the one. Most of that goes, Dr. Brentman looks at most of those.
Okay.
So
and then you're, there we see in Oceanside, which is, I guess, North San Diego County.
That's correct.
For those that aren't familiar with that. Oh, wow. Well, this is just amazing. And now I'm wondering of the ways that we would want to spread the word. Is this something that you'd encourage people to have their doctors ask more about IPT, or what methods would you suggest so that we can help get the word out there more?
Yeah, that's really difficult to answer that. I think what we've seen happen is patients come to us, they learn what we do, they undergo treatment, and then they go back to their other doctors, and the doctor says, wow, what are you doing? And then sometimes the doctors will call us if they're interested. Some of the oncologists will take an interest. There's some that I talk to on a fairly regular basis about some mutual patients. Other oncologists don't want to hear about it. They don't want to know what we're doing, and they sort of dismiss it. We've got some in the community that really, they know we're there. They don't really say anything. They don't really get involved with what we're doing. Although we've extended invitations out to everybody, that any oncologist who wants to come in and learn or at least see what we're doing, we would certainly love to have them. We had recently received a letter from an oncology surgeon at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles who actually sent us a letter and a patient to come in and be treated. And he was specifically asking for the type of treatments that we do and not for the other treatments that were offered through the traditional route. So that was a little surprising but very affirming for us to know that there are other doctors aware of what we're doing. The patients themselves can ask their doctors about it. There are some places on the internet which will give some information about IPT, but it's not very accurate, and it's really written by, I don't know who reads, a quack watch or somebody else is writing things that really is not very accurate about IPT. So there's, and it's interesting, a lot of physicians are willing to give an opinion about IPT, but they know absolutely nothing about it. So if you ask me something that I don't know anything about, I'll tell you. I don't know, I'll research it and get back to you, but I'm not going to give you an answer about something I don't know anything about. But for some reason, doctors hear something about IPT and they don't really understand it, but they say, oh, this doesn't work. Or they know nothing. There's no way, where's the proof behind it kind of thing. But I think as the younger doctors are coming out and they're realizing that there's a lot more to what's going on in medicine right now, particularly a lot of nutrition, you see a lot of people undergoing chiropractic care, acupuncture, and so on, that other doctors say, well, you know, we need to sort of look at this and see what other options are there for patients. And I think this is a very viable option for cancer treatment.
Yeah, basically doing standard modalities in terms of using chemo, except modifying the approach in a way that makes it much more effective and using a lower dose.
Right.
And then adding in other factors with the different testing, the nutritional testing, and then this DNA testing through the blood. These are powerful approaches. And I'm just wondering, you'd made mention of something nutritionally. I was noticing on your website there that you have a place that talks about other treatments. And I see things here, bioidentical natural hormones, HRT, low testosterone in men. There's a number of human growth hormone. Would you be willing to share a little bit about some of these other things? I don't know if those are part of some of the cancer treatments or if they're more general treatment that you'd use on many different patients.
You know, a little bit of both. I think what we do with a lot of our patients, particularly cancer patients, that especially those that we notice become debilitated, it's surprising too that cancer patients are nutritionally depleted in a number of different ways and they may not even know it, that we like to build up nutrition, but we also like to look at what's called the neuroendocrine system, the neurobrain endocrine being the hormonal system. And so what's the connection here? The brain, it essentially regulates the three major glands in the body, the thyroid, the adrenal glands, and the sex organs. And the thyroid itself is the gland of metabolism that keeps the metabolic rate going in the body. The adrenal glands are your stress glands, and they produce hormones to regulate your minerals. They regulate your stress hormones. And it also is the gland that essentially releases adrenaline in a flight or fright situation. And, of course, your sex organs are producing hormones as well. And then we go and we look at what the brain is actually putting out in terms of its own balance. The brain has a biochemical balance very similar to a mechanical balance in your body. For example, if you flex your arm and you extend your arm, it's essentially a balance of muscles that control things from going for the use of your arm. And the same thing happens biochemically. So there's excitatory components of the brain and inhibitory components. The excitatory components is what helps keep you awake during the day, is what gets you up and going in the morning. And then the inhibitory is what puts you to sleep at night and helps keep you asleep. And those types of chemistry, there's about 12 or up to 14 different things that can be measured in the urine to show what the brain is putting out. So we like to balance that chemistry so the brain is essentially functioning properly and has a full tank on which to create the chemistry it needs from the precursors of the raw materials to make it with. Then go back and correct the thyroid-related issues, the adrenal issues, and the hormone issues, the sex hormone issues. And most people with cancer have low thyroid function. And I don't say that, I say function specifically because the blood tests will look normal, but they'll come in, they'll feel cold, their energy levels will be low, body temperatures will be low. These people are functionally hypothyroid, so we will begin to replenish the thyroid, begin to build that back up again. So that particular approach works for people with hormonal issues, fatigue issues, that could be male or female issues. So when we see menopausal people, women coming in and they're complaining of the hot flashes and the mood swings, well, good chances are their inhibitory and excitatory balance in the brain is off, and they're lacking serotonin, for example. And by building up serotonin levels and then also replacing the hormones, and we use bioidentical hormones, then that creates a much better balance in terms of their well-being, improving their energy, and getting the women basically back on track. Male hormone we do similarly. We can do that with men as well. But if you balance the brain and then start fixing the other organs, people's overall health will improve and their quality of life. So that's one area that we work on.
Yeah, and that would be what you would consider the beginning point is for the hormone therapies is balancing the hormones in the brain.
Balancing brain chemistry is the first part. It's called neurotransmitters, and that we balance those. Yeah, hormones. Essentially, the hormones are the thyroid, the adrenal, and the sex hormone system. So if you balance that out, people actually will start feeling better. have more energy, they'll be more productive, their mood will be better. But we've done this with a number of patients who come in on multiple antidepressants, and we've actually weaned them of the antidepressants and built up their brain chemistry, and they've done fine.
Ah.
A lot fewer side effects, too. So this is another nutritional angle or another approach to take on depression, anxiety, hyperactivity, those types of problems.
Because if I understood, I don't know if it's 300 million plus prescriptions a year of Prozac or Zoloft, different types of those pharmaceuticals.
A phenomenal amount of money being spent on pharmaceuticals. I agree.
And here, plus there can be some nasty side effects from what I'm hearing.